the Delaware Valley. On a beautiful Thursday afternoon, welcome to Taking Charge with Paula Robinson. We've got a fantastic show. Paula, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Not bad. It's been a crazy week. I lost my voice. And
from sports?
Yes. I went to the Phillies game and I guess I've had a whole, I've always had a gritty voice, right? But I ended up, so my wife and I went to the game, and then I had a high school reunion the night after, and between the two of them, I could barely speak, right? Now, most people, that would be, you know, they'd be ecstatic to find that out. But, you know, at the end of the day, I made me a little nervous because it didn't come right back. That's an extra timpani there. Yeah, there we go. That's your sound effects. Thank you, TJ. So having said that, I'm okay now.
I'm glad to hear it.
Oh, mother of God. So how are you?
I'm doing really well. Thanks.
Now, are you a sports fan at all or no?
Yes, I do watch it. I'm not intricately.
Well, I'm about to ask you the intricacies of the Cover 2 defense and what you think the Eagles should be doing next week after the bye.
I couldn't tell you. Yeah. I enjoy watching it. My husband knows everything when he watches it.
Yeah.
It's funny because he'll make a comment, and then 2 seconds later, they'll say the exact same thing.
Yeah. I'm the same way with my wife. Like, we watch the games, and I will I like kind of talking about it. I love it when that happens. If I say something and the announcer says the same thing, like, and he's a Hall of Famer. I'm like, well, evidently, you know, me and the Hall of Famer, you know, like, I know as much as the Hall of Famer. Maybe not. But it is fun. It's a definite interesting time in Philly right now. A lot of good sports teams. It adds to the optimism. And a little bit of, we could always use some, you know, when you read the papers or watch the news on Monday mornings, it's, you know, obviously in doom and gloom in the city a lot. And so it's always great when we can be uplifted.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a really cool thing. And we're going to have Derek Patterson on the broadcast. We're going to bring him up after our break. At the 2:15 mark, but what I want to do is just remind our listeners, obviously, a little bit about your practice. You know, at workers' compensation. Remind our listeners, if you will, what you do at Robinson Law.
Sure, I represent injured workers throughout eastern Pennsylvania in many counties, and I've been out on my own since 2011. And before that, I did both claimant and defense work. So I've been on both sides, which gives me a real distinct advantage. But I represent injured workers solely now since I've gone out on my own.
Absolutely. And when we, you know, by the way, that's a massive benefit to the client when you talk about having been able to work on both sides. Most really, you know, top attorneys, they have that experience working on the defense side, and so therefore you can walk your client through what's going on. Nothing surprises you, it is. I find it interesting. What is the atmosphere? And I'll talk to you about some of those things that you've learned when you were working on the defense side. What's the atmosphere there? Like, what's their disposition just in general? What's the mission, from the insurance company?
Sure. When I did defense work, and it's still the same today, when you're working with the adjuster, they get a file, and it's not a person. This is another file. And their job is to get the person off comp as quickly as possible. So there's no real feel to it, no compassion. It's just kind of rut work. And then the defense attorneys, of course, they bill on an hourly basis. So it's just kind of robotic on both on that side.
Yeah, and what about when it's a catastrophic injury, something that's fairly obvious? You know, somebody, you know, clearly is catastrophic. That, you know, there's like, in other words, they didn't tear, you know, their back muscle, or they didn't, you know, it's not a slip disc. It's an obvious crush or a fall. How does the insurance company handle that? What's the perspective when it's, there's no way to deny it almost?
Well, I mean, if it's really, really bad, most of the times the adjusters do issue a notice of temporary compensation payable accepting it. So with that temporary notice, that just buys the adjuster 90 days to do their investigation, which they should get done in 21 days from the date that they get that file. But a lot of the adjusters are using that form now, which probably came out about 10 years ago. It just buys them more time. And if they don't do anything by the 85th day, it'll convert to a regular notice of compensation payable. But I would say that most adjusters take those catastrophic claims a little more seriously. But even at that, I'm seeing the temporary notices. They're not outright accepting it.
Yeah, is that just like, in a sense, a protocol for these individuals? Like, how do they make a determination? I'm trying to kind of get the mindset of the other side and in regards to what an injured worker and an individual like yourself now who represents the worker, what you're up against.
Well, they gather information from the employer, the adjuster does, or they're supposed to. And a lot of times they'll call the claimant for a recorded statement. Then they look at medical records that they get initially, and then they'll make a determination as to whether to accept it or deny it. And sometimes when they accept it, it's medical only, and they don't even pay the wage loss. So, you know, it's up to the attorney to make sure you stay on top of that time deadline. And if there is a petition that needs to be filed to get them on comp, then that has to be filed. But it's not automatic.
Yeah, and as when you're, now that you're representing the client, what is your procedure like when you see a situation like that? How do you, I don't know if you can expedite it, but how do you address it?
Well, my first item of business is to enter my appearance in WICUS, our automated system, and then I have to order the bureau records to see what the last operative document is. Then I always tell the client, once I have those bureau records, I'll give you a call and let you know what we have. I'll explain it, and then that'll determine how I need to proceed. So without those bureau documents, you're just kind of stumbling in the dark. You really have to know what you're looking for.
How long does it take you to get them?
Not long. I put a request in with different authorizations and my fee agreement. And because everything is automated through WICUS, I'm now getting them in typically a day or two.
Wow.
And then they'll be made available for approximately 2 months.
And typically speaking, how many people, when they're, you know, how many injured workers don't even have no idea or don't understand even what a temporary, you know, a temporary order is to get your benefits?
No, they have no clue. I mean, they don't do this. It's not their job.
So it's awful shocking when they get turned, you know, when the check doesn't come in.
Yeah.
At that point, and that could be a problem. And what do you, when they stop the, you know, their comp, and they're obviously injured, what is your process at that point to kind of get them back on track?
Well, if it's been denied or their comp is just unilaterally stopped, which they're not allowed to do, then I will file a claim petition to get it before a work comp judge. And then in some instances, depending on what bureau documents were filed by the adjuster or not, I'll file a penalty petition in conjunction with that. Because if a case is accepted medical only, they're not accepting disability. So that's why you have to file the claim petition and pretty much start the process from scratch.
And do they need approval from a judge to get to actually stop the, or, you know, or they, in the benefits? Or can they do it on their own?
No, they cannot do it on their own. They're not like New Jersey. And I don't practice in New Jersey, but from what I understand, they can just be cut off at any time. So they have to have a judge's order modifying, suspending, or terminating their benefits.
Yeah, and just I wonder a little bit, like, you know, when you go to a grand jury, and it's a criminal case, right? I don't think it's necessary to notify, you know, the individual who that, you know, you're trying to find out if an organization is a criminal organization. So the FBI might go to a grand jury to see if they can get an order on it. Well, they don't have to typically, in many cases, notify the individual. They put that. I wonder when an insurance company files that stay, you know, of benefits, stopping the benefits, and a judge has to, you know, make that decision. Why they don't call in the actual individual or their attorney so that you could actually, like, what is the judge basing that on? Just one side's?
No, for the defense counsel has to file a petition to modify, suspend, or terminate the benefits. And then both sides have the opportunity to produce evidence. And if the case doesn't settle, then the whole process is about 9 months to a year to get to a judge's decision. And that involves two medical experts, one from each side. It might involve a vocational expert on the defense side. And then I typically hire my own vocational expert to contradict what they're saying. So with all the different testimonies, including the claimant, the trial schedule is about 9 months.
But if you're involved in a case, okay, many times I imagine you wouldn't be if it's early in the process and the individual was given a temporary, workers' comp benefits. And so when they go to try to stop them benefits, it has to go by a judge. Is that what you said? I want to make sure.
Well, one way, if it's on a notice of temporary comp payable, at the 85th day, 5 days before the 90 days runs, the adjuster can issue a denial and a notice stopping the temporary compensation payable. They could even do it before then. They don't have to wait to the 85th day. And once, if they file those documents, that's proper. But if they just unilaterally stop it, that's not acceptable. And a penalty petition would have to be filed.
But if they're, you know, if they want to file and do it the right way to stop it, okay, does the individual, you know, so you're telling me they have to file with a judge and the judge has to agree?
No. If the notice is temporary, and then they can file a denial and a notice stopping the temporary comp payable.
Okay.
But if there's medical evidence that that the other side presents, then the claimant will have a chance to present medical evidence.
Okay. Well, listen, when it comes to workers' compensation, it's a certified, the lawyers are certified, so it's that specialized of an area of the law, so it's important to obviously take this in. Let's do this. Let's go to a quick break. We're gonna have our guest coming on the program when we get back. Derek Patterson. Thanks so much for joining us on Taking Charge with Paul Robinson. We'll be back after the break.
Suffering a work injury can be a debilitating experience. Trying to navigate the workers' compensation system and process on your own can make it even worse. From the point of injury to the culmination of your claim and everything in between, certified workers' compensation attorney and specialist Paula Robinson will handle every facet of your workers' compensation matter to ensure that you get the representation and results you need in the face of a system that often treats injured workers like they don't matter. If you get injured on the job, call workers' compensation attorney Paula Robinson of Robinson Law at 215-530-7166 or go to robinsonlawyer.com. That's Robinson, LWYR.com, and get the support, the representation, and results you need to get back on your feet again.
Ladies, Have you ever felt bloated for no good reason? Pelvic pain or pressure? Too full too fast, even if you're eating just a little bit? Not so unusual, right? But if you have any of these things and they go on for 2 weeks or longer, see a doctor. Because bloating, feeling too full too fast, and pelvic pain or pressure that doesn't go away can be signs of a gynecologic cancer, like cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer. And if your periods are heavier or longer than usual, or you have bleeding after menopause, see a doctor right away. It may be nothing, but find out for sure. Learn the symptoms. Listen to your body. For more information about gynecologic cancers, call 1-800-CDC-INFO. That's 1-800-CDC-INFO. A message from HHS and CDC's Inside Knowledge campaign. Ladies, have you ever felt bloated for no good reason? Pelvic pain or pressure? Too full too fast, even if you're eating just a little bit? Not so unusual, right? But if you have any of these things and they go on for 2 weeks or longer, see a doctor. Because bloating, feeling too full too fast, and pelvic pain or pressure that doesn't go away can be signs of a gynecologic cancer, like cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer. And if your periods are heavier or longer than usual, or you have bleeding after menopause, see a doctor right away. It may be nothing, but find out for sure. Learn the symptoms. Listen to your body. For more information about gynecologic cancers, call 1-800-CDC-INFO. That's 1-800-CDC-INFO. A message from HHS and CDC's Inside Knowledge campaign.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Taking Charge with Paul Robinson here on WWDB Talk 860. Paul and I are talking workers' compensation and that temporary
notice of temporary compensation payable.
Okay. So that would be that's something, I've heard it many times. People get a false sense of security once they get that. They don't understand that that doesn't mean,
In.
It doesn't mean you're in. Having said that, we are going to bring in Derek Patterson, personal injury attorney, Patterson Injury Lawyers. Derek, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good. How you doing? Thanks for having me today. How you doing, Paula?
Good.
It's definitely great to have you on the program. Remind our listeners, you were just on the program. By the way, this is like a little reunion, except right. In the studio. to our listeners, remind our listeners a little bit about yourself and Patterson Injury Lawyers.
Attorney Derek Patterson, Patterson Injury Lawyers, personal injury firm based out of Philadelphia, 1650 Market Street, Suite 3600. My telephone number is area code 215-383-9959. If you want to reach me, my website is www.pattersoninjury.com.
You know, it'd be really cool.
What's up?
If you came up with some sort of not a catchphrase, but like a pretty cool little thing, like the pill or something like that. I would love to see that.
Well, that
did I bring? Is that my invention? It's yours.
No, it's mine. Come on. If you're engine and auto,
the guy's thunder. Come on.
If you're engine and auto accident, you want to get the pill. Right. And how I came up with that is when you're injured, you want to get better. So doctors prescribe you pills. So get the pill. But Patterson pill stands for Patterson Injury Lawyers.
Yep.
And not an actual.
No,
pill.
I got it. We've done some shows before, so I
needed something that was like catchy.
Right.
Because all these other guys, they kind of been out here for years, so I just needed something to
hit
the ground running.
Let me tell you how it happened too, Paula. It's about 2:30 in the morning. I was at the club, of course, and I get a call on the phone. It's Derek. He's like, "What should I do?" And I told him. That's a lie, by the way. As attorneys, the two of us have to have integrity. I hang out with Drew Walker. I don't need it. I mean, I could just come. Nothing I say is true. So anyway, definitely a great show. I wanted to kind of we talked a little bit about, working together. Patterson Injury Lawyers, when it comes to personal injury, define that, in other words, what type of cases are we talking about?
So I pretty much handle personal injury cases, car accidents, slip and falls, dog bites, pretty much anything where someone else is negligent towards my client. That, yeah, pretty much it.
So if there was an assault also, something like that?
Yeah, assault, primary, you know, at, like at your club back in the day, Joe.
I was going to say, if Jude Walker just, you know, he turns around and gets sick of me and takes me out like a bad habit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, you know, anything where there's an injury of a negligent manner. And so, and we talked a little bit about auto accidents. How, Paul, how often in regards to, so people think a car accident is just a, you know, it's, they don't realize, obviously it could be a work accident also. Mm-hmm. How, of all the injuries you get, what percentage are those actually driving for a living? Does that happen a lot?
Not a lot. I'd say about 10% of my practice.
And what type of, you know, what is that? Like you have SEPTA bus drivers, you know, cab drivers or Uber drivers. What is, when we talk about an Uber driver, let's or a Lyft driver, let's look at that for a second. Is that
ride shares?
Okay, is that a, is that person an employee or a subcontractor?
They're contractors.
Okay, that, or, hasn't that been a sort of an issue?
Yeah, yeah, because I mean, you have so many people they work round the clock.
Yeah.
But they're 1099 contractors, so they're not employees.
Yeah, so that's not a work comp case if they get injured?
No.
That's very interesting. Yeah, you know, it's,
I mean, but if you're injured, I mean, you still have the third-party case.
Exactly.
Which some, sure. You know, someone like myself would be able to handle.
Yeah, and in that process, when it is a third-party auto accident, is there any different when it comes to insurance? Because when you have a regular auto accident, it depends on the amount of insurance. You talked about the education of the auto insurance discussion, but when it's a work related driving accident, is how does the auto insurance impact what's going on? Does work comp actually override all that if it is a work injury?
Well, it's actually just the two parts. So he would handle the third party action against the other driver.
Okay.
And their insurance company, and then workers' comp would be responsible for the medical bills and the wage loss.
Now, where do the two attorneys kind of overlay in that process? If it is a third party work accident, who would typically get that case first? The work comp.
It could go both ways. I mean, I've had PI attorneys refer cases to me that they need a work comp attorney, mm-hmm. and vice versa.
And so. Is the communication process between the two is in that situation paramount, or how does that? In other words, how do these cases?
Yes, it should be.
How do they impact? How does one hand on one side impact the other side? You know, if you're one attorney, you know, it does it affect both cases? If somebody, you know, your legal actions or Derek's, how do they impact one another?
Well, yes, it definitely impacts one another because let's say the claimant has to give an interview when they first give notice about the accident. The other attorney should know what they said. You have to share medical records back and forth. They can't be in the dark because with the PI, they have to see what the total amount of medicals that were expended before they can come up with a demand and their
liens.
Trial tactics. So I would say the workers' comp attorney has the bulk of the case in the beginning because they're monitoring the medical, they're taking a doctor's deposition, they're trying to keep the individual on workers' comp. And then workers' comp, of course, has what we call a subrogation lien where they're entitled to all their money back except a portion. There's a process that they figure out how much they're owed back if the individual gets an award or settles their third party case.
And how does that impact the third party case?
So Paula, like she said, she does all the work, right? And then in the end, I'm responsible for making sure all the bills are paid and the clients are mad at me. And why do I got to pay this bag? And Paula's gone.
I don't do that to my clients. Thank you.
but yeah, like she said, you know, if the workers' comp case has concluded, I said there'll be a subrogation lien from the workers' comp lien company, and they'll say, hey, we paid out X amount of dollars. Now we're asking for this money back once you settle or get some sort of award from that third-party case.
And let's I wanted to, you know, we've done a lot of radio, and you know, Paul, you've gone over workers' compensation details, and you know, people have to report them, obviously, you know, to their boss. I mean, that's notice is a big is very important. But I'd like to kind of, you know, kind of spice this show up a little bit, and because, you know, we've talked a little bit about we always talk about the law and you know, the different types of accidents, but I'd like to get into a little something where, you know, kind of eye-catching stuff that happens during cases that people don't typically, you know, either discuss. Let me give you an example. Face, you know, social media and cases, and I've had attorneys say to me, I've worked on cases for years, okay, and the individual was absolutely hurt and injured, but there they go, you know, at a wedding, you know, doing the, what do you call it when you go underneath it?
Limbo.
The limbo, yeah. Talk about the craziest thing you've ever seen during a case that impacted, you know, that came from left field, that impacted a case that, you know, you maybe had to learn from or just thought, I'll never see that again. Do you have anything like that, Paul?
I do.
Go ahead.
I had a case last year. The gentleman came to me and said, and he was working with a Verizon wire down here in Bala Cynwyd. And the wire came down and struck him, and he had scarring across his face. He had a concussion and swore up and down he couldn't do anything. And I was just about to pay my medical expert $5,000 to testify. The other side turned over evidence with him working out on Facebook. And not only was there like one or two posts, but he videoed himself working out almost daily. There were over 200 posts, pictures and videos. And the gentleman, he was kind of a big guy, but he would put like bags of sand on his shoulders, and then he would be, I don't even know what he was doing, but he was like bending and squatting and walking with all this weight on him. And meanwhile, he's telling me, I can't do a thing. I just stare out the window. And so I fired him. And surprisingly enough, I sent everything to him. I said, this is you, right?
How long was he out at the time?
It was like 4 months.
Okay.
And we were trying to get him benefits because they had denied him. So I filed a claim petition, and I'm trying to get the guy benefits. And I said, I'm sending you a letter. I'm discharging you as a client because you lied to me. Not only that, but they have you red-handed doing all this activity. You're not credible. I'm withdrawing the petition.
And what? And what was his response?
He was like, "Why?" And
what was his?
I couldn't understand his reaction, but I was not taking part of it because ethically, I'm not supporting somebody that's trying to get away with something.
Right, right. That conversation, you know, we've heard, you know, I've heard attorneys say they had cases for 2.5 years, and heard, you know, where they had that situation of playing touch football on the beach or something. Are the insurance companies, is that surveillance and that type of background investigation normal these days?
Yes. Yeah, it's getting to be more so. I just had a case that I wasn't on it long. I kept the guy's benefits. They were trying to stop his benefits. We were in court. We had a mediation scheduled. I got a call from the attorney the night before. I have to send you surveillance evidence. She was in the process of emailing it. I spoke to my client here. When I meet with my clients, I try to make sure they're not working anywhere else. They're not receiving money of any kind.
Right, of course.
So it turns out he had a business, which he failed to tell me about, and he was caught working at this business. So there again, I said, you know, at this point we were in litigation, so I have to ask the judge if I can withdraw my appearance. I can't just stop.
Right.
When we're in litigation.
Now, do you give a reason to the judge? I mean,
I don't, because that puts me in an ethical spot, because I still represent this person. So we have to go to a hearing. But the judges really do understand. You don't have to go into explanation. They get it. Especially when I canceled a mediation where we could have settled the case that day. The adjuster had authority. They were all ready to go. We were all ready to go. And I canceled it.
Right.
And that client said, why are you doing that? And then again, I had to have, again, this same conversation.
Now, do you have a conversation beforehand? Like, in other words, I've heard, you know, attorneys will say, listen, I have a friend of mine, and he was on workers' compensation, and I ran into him at Ridge and Midvale. We were right at the AM PM mini market there where the gas station is. And we're sitting there, we're standing there outside talking. We talked for about a half hour. He didn't do anything. It turns out he calls me a couple of weeks later. They were videoing him the whole time, and if they were videoing him, they just proved his point. Like, in other words, I think he had his crutches and stuff like that. But do you have a conversation with your clients ahead of time?
Yes.
Because people could, you know, somebody might be able to throw a football for 30, you know, for 5 minutes, okay, and still feel like crap, but it doesn't look good on, you know, it'll be definitely something if somebody videos, they'll try to use against you. Even though it doesn't prove that you're not injured, it's still not a good look. Do you have that conversation?
Yes, at our initial meeting and throughout our, my representation, we have those conversations.
You have typically wild card clients like Andrew Walker, of course.
Yeah, you got to watch that guy.
He's a problem. He's assaulted me many times. I don't want to get into it. I'm afraid of him. Talk about your experience.
He's a beast, I see.
He is a beast. He's a problem. He's really taking them pictures so we can send them to you and say, I know what you look like. we'd like to have fun with you. Derek, any situations?
I do. I actually have two of them. I'm going to get them real fast. So I was working for a plaintiff firm before I started my own. I was working for a plaintiff firm. And it's actually my first trial. They were like, Derek, go ahead and do this trial. So I'm like, okay, cool. So, you know, a few days before, I'm preparing my opening statement, you know, cross-examination and all that and closing. You know,
That must be awesome.
Just kind of preparing it, right? And we get in there. I'm the plaintiff, so it's still my case in chief. And, you know, I put my client on the stand asking all these questions, you know, about, you know, how her life has been, how slip and fall has affected her life and things like that. She's saying this, she can't do this. So defense goes, right? And they're like, hey, you know, they ask her questions and they go to play a video. Now, I had just got thrown into this trial, so I really wasn't there during the discovery phase. So I really didn't know what they had. I mean, honestly, I didn't know what they had. And they play this video. Music comes on. My client's standing there, table full of alcohol in front of her. And I mean, she's, woo! And just like, I mean, just partying. And I sat there for about 30 seconds. I said, I stood up. I said, Your Honor, we don't need to see no more of the video. The defense counsel's like, it's done anyway. As far as like the video's complete. And I'm just sitting there like, the client tells me, like, she's like, what do I do? I mean, I just have to continue. Like, I just have to continue with the case.
It's hard to sit there and go, my client is incapacitated when she just did the, you know.
Oh, my.
She was, you know, shaking the booty all damn night. You know, it's a problem.
So I have that one. And I have one just recently that I had gotten. And client said that they slipped and fell in a supermarket. So I'm speaking with the adjuster from the insurance company. And I'm like, hey, you know, do you guys have any video of this slip and fall? My client didn't have any video. She's like, yeah, we have the video. I said, well, can you turn it over to me before I file suit? Just turn the video over to me so I'll know what I need to do. As far as, you know, going forward with it. So they don't send me the video. I file suit. The attorney for the supermarket calls me, hey Derek, you know, I just wanted to, you know, just let you know about your client, you know, her history and things like that. And I'm going to send you the video. I said, well, the insurance company, they had the video the entire time, never sent it to me. Like, thank you for sending it to me now. They send me the video. Right.
Is that an ethical thing between obviously discovery back and forth? I mean,
I appreciate his professionalism because at that point he didn't have to send me the video until it was time to actually exchange discovery. But he just wanted to let me know, like, you need to see this video. I'm watching a video. My client's walking along the deli area, like, you know, where the deli area, you know, they have like, I guess the, I don't know, the return from the air conditioner or the whatever it is underneath.
Yeah.
And it was like a little bit of condensation or something like that. So I guess she walks and like she walks and then she looks down. All she does is just look down, walks back, orders her food, goes back, pulls her phone out, takes a photo. And I'm like, I watched the video. I'm like, what happened? So you didn't see me slip? I said, no. No, I didn't see you slip.
And how long were you into the case at this point?
6 to 8 months.
Oh my God.
So I said, listen, I can't represent you no more. For one, we're not in plain and friendly Philadelphia. We're out way out somewhere. This I can't represent you because I know this. I said, even if you did slip, this is not the type of slip that brings about a personal injury lawsuit. They sent me the ISO report. You know about the ISO report. Sent me the ISO report.
Yes.
She filed about 15 claims since like 07. I said, oh no, not me.
I mean, that's you know, I mean, that has to, especially if you've been in there. I guess you live and you learn. I guess at every stage of the game.
I think every attorney's been through it, especially
yeah,
if
course.
You've been practicing as long as I have.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, certainly, you know, I've heard workers' compensation attorneys say, though, that the majority of fraud, and this individual has said it from the top of a mountain. He wasn't saying it accidentally. He said it on the radio 100 times. It happens on the defense side. That's what his, and he said that the stickler, you know, what ends up happening, and you talk about both your clients like that, it makes it harder for the individuals, obviously, that are hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what
it does. It really does.
And it's a, you know, you plus it's a contingency fee agreement for both years, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
you're doing, Paul, you were about to put $5,000 out on an expert.
Yes.
I mean, that's like a Drew Walker type of money for lunch.
Right.
Okay.
Surf and turf.
Yeah, surf and turf bottle of Dom used to be Cristal. Okay. Not anymore. But it's absolutely amazing. Let's talk about catastrophic injuries and cases. What I admire most about what the TUIs do is just impact, is literally take on somebody else's problems at some of the worst times in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And I said many times, I don't know how emotionally you do it. I say that, you know, and sure, okay, every case is not like one that you're wincing, but, you know, certainly you walk into some absolutely painful situations and your professionalism has got you as where you are right now. But there had to be some situations in your lives where you couldn't totally separate yourself. And when you left that room, you know, you had to, you know, it had to emotionally impact you and maybe even motivate you even more. Or maybe you knew the situation wasn't good for the other side, for the potential client, and your heart came out for them. Talk about, you know, times where at least, you know, a case where, and of course, we're not talking names, but I want people to understand what the TUIs go through on occasion and what attorneys go through when you're dealing with somebody's life who's been turned upside down. Any particular cases, and Paula, you've had a long career, and maybe even it was when you were on the defense side where you said, oh my God, I do not know how this person's going to get through this. And you can't help but take it home with you in one sense or another.
Well, I've had a lot of cases like that, but I have a case currently where my guy was injured in December of 2017. We still have the case. We're in litigation round number 5. We settled the wage portion of the case back a few years ago, but the medical stayed open. He was a truck driver on the back of his truck cleaning the back window. It was icy and snowy, fell and struck directly the back of his head, injured his shoulder, had to have a total shoulder replacement, has had neck injuries. Again, surgery needed. and he's still suffering from the concussion. He still has blurred vision, double vision. And at this point, he's on so much medication for the migraines, and he's had cognitive difficulties. And it's just, his wife said his brain is just melting. He's just, and every time we go through the litigation and I have to prep him to testify.
Yeah, so remember all over, or is he forget? Is he memory issues?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
And well, you'll believe it. I mean, we've had doctor after doctor say he's fully recovered. He can go back and drive a truck. Mm. Well, I wouldn't want that man driving a truck anywhere near me.
Yeah.
He probably couldn't even spell truck.
I wonder,
I mean, it's awful.
And when you get somebody that does that, what's your response to them? Are you kidding me?
Yeah. The other attorney has been pretty vicious.
How do you handle that situation? The other attorney being pretty vicious on an obvious situation.
Well,
by the way, buddy, let me tell you something. I hope it happens to you. I'm just being sarcastic when I say that.
I don't go to that level, but we had a hearing before the judge because I wanted to. I had to subpoena a doc. It was kind of a long story, but anyway, I wanted to depose this other individual about bills that had been denied. And she was fighting it, and she actually said to the judge, "This is the longest case I've had, and my client is spending so much money on this case, it's ridiculous." And I thought, you ought to be in the claimant's shoes. His life is totally ruined, and you're worried about a big insurance company having to spend money?
Ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
And especially since you understand both sides of the coin.
Yes.
Who are you kidding? Like, you know what I mean? I'm talking about them.
Well, and now we're looking at $40,000 worth of medical bills that they have denied for no good reason, that they're saying some of the drugs are for unrelated illnesses like schizophrenia. And I just had that doctor testify who prescribed them, and she explained what drugs were prescribed, why they were prescribed, and yes, they're related to the concussion.
Well, it's interesting. And by the way, that doctor, that expert, you had to pay that expert, correct?
Well, yes, and I'm paying another expert because that doctor hadn't seen him in a while, and they filed yet another termination petition having another doctor say he's fully recovered, there's nothing wrong with him, so now we have to fight that, and that deposition is in January with a specialist. He's a neurosurgeon who specializes in concussions.
Incredible. Just incredible. Derek, any situations that have impacted you?
I do have one. And it's a case that I took from, kind of took over from another attorney. There was this gentleman, old, but he's in his 60s, early 60s.
Hey, easy.
I said he's not.
Right.
I said early 60s.
Watch yourself.
I said
not. Hold on. You're surrounded.
I said not. So I think I forgot what he initially was diagnosed with, but he would have issues with digesting his food.
Yeah.
So he went around all these experts. He said he had it since he was like a kid. He went around all these experts, and he finally went to a doctor who said, "Hey, I can fix it for you." Right. Doctor says, "Doc, are you sure? Like, cause if it's not going to work 100%, don't do it. I've been living all my life like this. I'm fine. Like, you don't have to do it." Doc said, "Yeah, I could do it." So they went over what the actual procedure would be. He said, "Okay, cool." Right. Doctor goes in and does something totally different than what the client actually consented to. Right. And essentially what he did was he like went in and like cut the guy's esophagus or something, like put a slit in it because he said that would help him digest the food. Now the client pretty much can't even, he said it takes him like a full day to drink a bottle of water, and he has to eat just basically like puree and broth all day.
What, is that, that's a medical malpractice case.
Yeah.
Is that case still active?
Yeah, it's still pretty much going.
Wow. Away. And medical malpractice, are you handling that yourself?
I am with some assistance from others.
Yeah.
Yeah, because those things are heavy. When that's heavy, heavy litigation, heavy money.
What? Well, but, as a boutique farm owner, no matter how heavyweight you are.
But you wanted a situation where I'm like, is this like that man has to live with this for the rest of his
life. And,
he's lost so much weight. He showed me a photo of him 2 years ago, 3 years ago. I'm like, wait, that's you? He's like, yeah.
He lost a lot of weight. Get me that doctor's number. but that is a, and the proof is right there. I mean, it's obvious. I mean,
it's there what my client consented to. And it's there what the doctor actually.
So you're proving the standard of care, right? It obviously was breached.
Basically, of course.
Yeah, and that kind of leads me to, another area where, you know, so many people think they have a case. Okay, somebody, you know, I mean, I got a call this morning. I'm wondering, you know, from an individual who was threatened. He drove a bus for a living, and he was threatened. And you know, that when it comes to medical malpractice, I mean, that, you know, you're an outstanding attorney, you know what a case, but so many people with medical malpractice,
that term is used so loosely.
So loosely. I had a buddy call me up from the hospital. I guess he was in the hospital. He's my best friend. I hope he's listening. Cause I told him directly. He said, the doctor's coming in. Shh. I'm going to sue him. Right. I'm like, well, what's the problem? He was late with my medicines. I'm like, yo, you got a big case. Right? You got to be mad. I told him, listen, I don't pretend to be a doctor or a lawyer, but I do interview a decent amount. Right? And I have heard that, I saw one time where a guy called me up. He lost his leg and couldn't get a PI attorney to take the case. Eventually he did. But that's a couple years back and he's still doing it. But in other words, it was so obvious to him, but to some other people, the standard of care was not breached. So you never really know. Obviously, you have to go to a qualified attorney to look at that. But tell me about this, Paula. A guy calls me up. He's threatened with a knife. Guy says to him, if you, he was obviously, and this just happened, no names, of course, but a bus driver, a patron gets on the bus, says to him, I was on a bus last week and I wanted to get off at this stop, and they didn't let me off that stop. They missed the stop and I had to walk 7 blocks. And then the guy goes, if you don't, this is the stop I want to go. That better not happen to me or I'm going to, you know, I got a knife here. I'm going to stab you. Immediately the guy took a panic attack. Right. And then, you know, so he called, got right out of the bus, called for help. And now he's out of work. He says, and this just happened, like literally within the week. Is that a workers' compensation related case? Is that PTSD, or is he supposed to be handled that within his regular duties of? Is that a work comp
case?
Well,
the post-traumatic stress disorder cases are very difficult, and it has to be like a condition of that work, like you're a police officer. So that, unfortunately, I would think that'd be hard to prove.
And I had kind of known that, but I'm not a lawyer, so I can't give. His union had an attorney that they used, and I just, you know, I said, look, you know, this is probably who you want to call to get a consultation. He wanted, by the way, he didn't want to be off on work comp. The employer offered him 4 providers to go to. None of them, as far as counseling, none of them had any appointments for him. So they didn't get back to him. So would he be able to get, you know, a counseling for that? I mean, is that something that the work comp provider would fight to the death?
Well, he could go anywhere he wanted to get counseling. If
who's going to pay for it?
Well, his own insurance at that point.
Yeah.
Because it's not an accepted claim.
That's a good point. And in your situation, and you know, you're dealing with a lot of cases.
I do.
People, I'm sure, walk in and say, "I got a big one for you." You hold on. You're welcome. And you're like, "Well, I'm not going to be planning my vacation just yet."
So it's funny because I just posted, just put up a post on social media about that, and in the post I said, "A lawsuit is not based on emotions, but it's based off damages." You can't just be, because you feel as though like your feelings were hurt or someone embarrassed you, you're automatically like entitled to some sort of compensation.
Even if you get hurt, even, you know, the fact is, if you go right back to work and you're able to do the things you used to be, which is really the most important thing, mm-hmm. it may not be a case, even if it was a negligent type situation, or at least it may not be a big case.
Right. You're right. It may not be a big case to what they're thinking. There's something there, you know. But like I said, it's not always based off of emotions. A lot of people think, you know, just because they were embarrassed in some sense, that they're automatically due to compensation, and that's just not the case.
You know, I just wanted to jump in here. It's interesting to me that the areas where people live. Like, I do a lot of work up in the Lehigh Valley, and I do work down here. But the claimants they can be very different. Some people call an attorney the minute after they're hurt, and they want
justice.
Everything to be done right now, and they don't understand it's a process. And then, you know, I have other clients who wait months and months. Well, I didn't think this was right, but you know, I never had to get a lawyer, but here I am. It's just...
Are the juries different in the different counties?
Mm-hmm. Like, that's what they call it, plaintiff-friendly Philadelphia.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but the jury, your peers, you know, I know it's plaintiff-friendly Philadelphia, but, you know, you really want people to give somebody the benefit of the doubt. And in Philly, you know, people, I guess... We're all grinders here in Philly.
Right.
People are going to want to give somebody the benefit of the doubt if they're, you know, if they're injured. I guess in some areas, like, for example, Minnesota. Mm. That's where Drew's from, by the way. you know, but, you know, where what makes them so difficult in other areas?
That's a good question, Joe. I really can't even 100%. I don't know. I just know this is plaintiff-friendly Philadelphia. Now, I know some experiences that I've had. I've gone out to Berks County, and I pretty much had no luck out in Berks. But what I saw when I was out there was that it was an arbitration I was out there for. I've been out there a few times, but there was an arbitration I was out there for. And you had me, and I think I talked about this on another show too, Joe, about what happened with that situation. But it was me and my client. And, you know, we're sitting in there before the arbitration comes, and our panel is talking to the defendant. And they're like, oh, you know, like, what do you do? And she's like, oh, well, I work at, I don't know, the Green Turtle or something. Like, oh, I love that place. She's like, yeah, I do the accounting for it. Oh, I love that place. That's just like the best restaurant. So right there, I'm like, there's a connection. Like, she's the accountant for the local bar that everyone goes to. And then you have defense counsel. Right, it's a small town. I mean, it's Burke County, yeah. Reading. Yeah, defense counsel. They're all attorneys. I mean, it's not like big Philadelphia. So the defense counsel is friends with everyone on our panel. Then you got, here I come from Philadelphia. Like, dude, you think you're going to come out here and win against us? Nah.
Right. You should walk in and go, I'm going to slam this thing down, just so you know, before we get started. I find it interesting. And what we rarely talk about. A lot of the cases that are so eye-popping that people go, and the experiences people actually go through. Let's do this. How much time do we have, TJ? We got 2 minutes. Let's do this. Derek, if you would, remind our listeners, obviously, your contact information.
Attorney Derek Patterson of Patterson Injury Lawyers, 1650 Market Street, Suite 3600. My telephone number is 215-383-9959. You can reach me on my website, www.pattersoninjury.com.
All right, and let me just say this before I go to our host, Paul Robinson. Let me go to Drew Walker, just as he's putting his headphones up. Drew, remind our listeners a little bit about the new business and what you do.
Yeah, so it's Premier Meta Group, booking, marketing, social media, public relations specialty. Contact 786-778-9178. And
you put this show together also, right?
That's right. Yep.
That's right. So,
thank you, Drew.
And shout out Paula. Yeah.
Shout out to Paula. And of course, Derek, Paula Robinson, contact information. Anybody's looking for a workers' compensation attorney?
Phone number is 215-530-7166. And my website is www.robinsonlwyr.com. And my Spanish phone number is also on my website. And for the Hispanic clients, my website totally converts into Spanish as well.
Oh, awesome. Wow. Well, it's fantastic.
I got to get that now.
Yeah.
Thank you, Paula.
You're welcome.
Good stuff. Listen, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Taking Charge with Paula Robinson. I want to thank Paula Robinson.
Thank you.
For being a fantastic host. I want to thank Derek Patterson. for doing the job he does for his clients.
Thanks for having me.
I want to thank Andrew Walker for making it happen. I want to thank TJ, our producer, for also making it happen. On behalf of everybody on the panel, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.
I am Melissa Canavo-Marino, inviting you to join me and Nick Alessandrini.